all to pdxnativeradio@gmail.com. As always, we'll see you next week, Indian Country.
Kibbe would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bridges Cafe and Catering, located at 2716 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard. Bridges and Cafe Catering is a restaurant and catering company located in Northeast Portland on the corner of MLK Jr. and Northeast Knott Street. Their kitchen is about 75% organic and open daily. Lunch was provided by Le Bistro Montage, located in Portland Industrial District at 301 Southeast Morrison Street. La Bistro Montage serves Creole cuisine, open daily until 2 a.m. Dinner was provided by Wright Bayou Cajun Cuisine, a pop-up food cart located in the Portland area, providing a fusion of traditional New Orleans cuisine with fresh and local ingredients from the Northwest region. Find Wright Bayou Cajun Cuisine at local Portland events. See their Facebook for more details. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now for your support.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month we'll show the documentary film The Cave on Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. The Cave is a story of female doctors saving lives in a secret underground hospital in Syria. The film follows the women as they contend with daily bombardments, chronic supply shortages, and the ever-present threat of chemical attacks. It paints a stirring portrait of courage, resilience, and female solidarity. Again, that's The Cave on Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is an outstanding source of local news and public affairs information that we all need. I very much appreciate being able to listen to people who have done the research, who have read the information, who have concisely put it together and has sent it out to me and in a non-commercial way.
Good evening, Portland. It is 7:03. Coming up next is From the Vault, Margaret Todd interviewing Toni Morrison.
Sex, race, and class, it's all there in Toni Morrison's latest novel, Love. It is brilliant, moving, simple, yet complex storytelling that is riveting as it is beautiful. It is a view into a slice of the Black community during the pre- and post-civil rights period that also reflects society as a whole. It is an intersection of art and politics so hard to achieve successfully, yet I think achieved in love. The range, depth, and clarity of the characters and the insight into how the influences on human behavior and how the divisions among us are played out in day-to-day living are beautifully reflected in love. We're delighted to welcome to Morning Review, the Sojourner Truth Edition, Black woman writer, Nobel Prize laureate, and Pulitzer Prize winner, Toni Morrison. Ms. Morrison, you have a huge fan base in our audience. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, this is a pleasure for me.
Oh, very good. I must ask you at the start, it has been reported that you have said many Black writers write for a white audience. Would you care to comment on that? And, you know, do you include yourself in that? Did you even say that?
Yeah, I said it. But what I meant was it doesn't matter who reads the book. You write for the widest audience you can garner. What I meant was, in the reading of a number of particularly early on books by Black writers, I as a reader could sense that they were addressing their remarks to a non-Black audience because that was, I suppose, the confrontation. A simple example, the book I love love a lot and admire the author a lot, Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. Well, the title gives it away, this awareness of the gaze of a white reader, because that character is not invisible to me, to a black person.
Yes.
He's invisible in the outside world. So it's the outside world that the narrator is addressing or editorializing for or explaining for, just, you know, in an absolutely flawless way. But when you read other black writers, sometimes you get the feeling, or I do, that they are explaining things that I know. I mean, every black person would not need to be told
right.
these things. So let's, you know, that was just a difference, I think, a shift in perhaps contemporary African-American writing from earlier writing, that's all.
Yes, so you think that has changed today?
I think so.
Yes.
I think the voice is so obviously directed within the community, and some people thought that meant that if you're writing as specifically as you can and carefully as you can within the community, that that is an exclusionary tactic, when it's just the opposite. It's when you know your material and it pleases yourself as a reader and readers like you, then other people from other cultures have access to it because of its specificity.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you have referred to race as the heart of democracy, and you have described race as the canvas of your new book, Love. Would you care to comment on that?
Well, there are very little, few things that you could talk about in this country that does not have race and racism as its underground, sometimes underground, sometimes on the ground subject. If you talk about the public school system, that's what you're talking about. If you talk about healthcare, that's what you're talking about. If you talk about the prison system, that's really what you're talking about. If you talk about labor law, that's what you're talking about.
Right.
I mean, there's virtually nothing that you can say, because the history of apartheid and separation and denigration is so deeply ingrained in not just the body politic, but the minds of blacks and whites, that it's very difficult. You can't extricate it. And, you know, everything. I mean, what the last election, or the question of voting rights, or the question of full citizenship, or the question of representation. I mean, all of those things can only be addressed completely and honestly when you are addressing racial problems. What's affirmative action about? It certainly isn't about women being offered places in the university because they are women and have been repressed, and therefore need a wider open door. I don't hear any women complaining about affirmative action.
Uh-huh.
It's only blacks who bear the brunt of that argument. They are the ones who may be getting something for nothing or being given special treatment, which is understood to be, quote, unfair, unquote.
Yes. Now, it's interesting that you said that, because I wanted to ask you about women, because you do deal with women a lot. You have said that you like outlaw women, and certainly your new novel, Love, is full of them, but also your other books, from The Bluest Eye to Sula, Beloved, and more. And in Love, you have a range of outlaw women, including a mysterious lead character who happens to be but one of the prostitute women in the story. What is it about outlaw women? Tell us about that.
Well, I guess it's a fascination for someone outside the border, so to speak, a daring woman. They generally come to a bad and weeping
That's true.
Because they are, if they do something anarchic, they are beaten back or they die or what have you. And sometimes what they do is terrible and has consequences, you know, that are, that might justify their pain. Nevertheless, as a writer, it's that person who pushes the envelope, who says no, who says, I'm not doing it that way. And whether they win or lose, you know, Beloved was a woman who said, no, I am not letting my children go back to slavery. Or it may be some other form of, you know, battle. But they, for me, it just opens the door to other kinds of considerations. And, you know, my life is very humdrum, so maybe that's another reason why I'm very interested in these women who just, you know, say no and stand up and take it on and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, you say you deal with race, but it seems to me as though you also address the issue of sex and sexism quite well. I was quite struck in reading Love, Your New Novel, with your understanding of how the work of women, often invisible background type work, even the work you are, may describe as humdrum, but that it keeps things going and that it often makes men look good.
Right.
Yeah, and one character described the work of herself and a woman who later lost her mind as, quote, the two of us were like the back of a clock. What a wonderful way to describe essential work.
Yeah, he was the face. Well, those things are intertwined for me, race and gender, because you have the two, you know, categories of people who had to fight and struggle for even the smallest things, let alone, you know, opportunities to fulfill themselves completely. And it's in Love I really wanted to expose, describe, and explore the gamut of the various kinds of love, and especially, of course, various kinds of the ways in which women love each other and how they, what you said before about how they relate to Bill Cozy, the man who sort of is the center of their lives or the void of their lives, is because in many instances women give men that power and ascribe him all those roles of friend, father, lover, benefactor, what have you. And the men take it, I suppose, or don't take it or refuse it. But what was true, I think, about those women, at least I hope it was clear, is that it was only until they could sort of exorcise him, you know, the last chapter called
yes.
Phantom,
yes.
But they sort of find out who they were. It's true that he manipulated their lives and ruined some of them, but they were complicit in it in a way. All they wanted to do was who did he love most, who did he ruin fast, what, you know, that constant cycle of we were his victims.
Ooh, some chilling stuff. Good evening, Portland. My name is Tammy, and you are tuned in to KBOO. This is our holiday drive. How's it going there in our volunteer center?
Good evening. My name's S.J. Oxendine, and you're listening to KBOO, and it's our holiday membership drive. KBOO is funded by our listeners, as you well know, and now's the time when we are asking you to go to the phone and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member. As I said, I'm SJ, and I'm a volunteer here at KBOO, and the thing I'm going to do tonight is try to give you a little information on why we're asking you to stand up and call 877-500-5266. One of the things that we're trying to get across to you is that we're trying to get our monthly sustaining members to increase their monthly donation by a dollar or two. If you can do that, it just might put us up to $27,000 a year, or possibly even $54,000 a year for two more dollars. So pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266 to increase your monthly donation and become a sustaining member. And some of the reasons that you need to go to make a donation for KBOO right now is that we have a lot of bills that we have to pay, and we need your help to do it. It costs $54,000 to keep the transmitter running, and the bills just keep piling up. So, if you can find your way clear to call 877-500-5266, you can be a member in good standing of KBOO.
You're listening to the Sojourner Truth edition of Morning Review, and we're having a discussion with Toni Morrison about her new book, Love. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Now, your story is based around a Black-owned resort that some have equated with a Black-owned resort in American Beach, Florida. And the case has been made that the civil rights movement that opened the door for integration was in part responsible for the demise of a sector of Black-owned businesses in the Black community when segregation existed. Do you think there has been a demise, or has there been a shift of that sector? And what do you think that has meant for those who have been left behind, so to speak, in the inner city areas or the parts that are primarily still primarily Black or and other people of color?
Well, there are a number of consequences of the civil rights movement. I just didn't want it to appear so simple that everybody just jumped on the wagon and said, let's go.
Yeah.
Because there were people who were frightened of it and alarmed by it, and they were people who had gone to those really first-rate Black schools, and they had gone to Howard University's Law School or School of Architecture or to Meharry Medical School, or were entrepreneurs, and they serviced a fairly captive audience, which were other Black people. And they were people that people were proud of, you know, the race men, they were called, or race women. And they, but the interesting thing is that they sort of had to live together, you know, on the same street. The doctor lived next door to the, I don't know, sanitation worker who lived next door to the barber. So that there, the class division was not so overwhelming. You could see them. Then here comes the civil rights movement, which was absolutely necessary and absolutely important. But it had some losses. People could then go vacation someplace else, or go to some other school, or move into other neighborhoods. And all I am suggesting is that that kind of leap forward progress, however difficult it was, has a loss. You pay a price for it. Every group that came to this country did. We just did it belatedly. You know, there are people who have told me that when the schools were integrated in their part of, a small town in the South, what happened was that the best Black teachers left and went to the white schools.
Yes.
And then we had years, you know, decades of Black schools begging for money. They have revitalized themselves since then. But there was a drain from schools that had these first-rate reputations because other schools were vying for that population, or students could choose whether to go, you know, to one place or another. So I just wanted to complicate that story a little bit, because I think some of it is still fluffing around those questions, that debate, in the contemporary world.
Yes, and in fact, I did want to ask you about that. I mean, it's wonderful, in fact, that you addressed it. I mean, in Love, several, if not all, the sectors, frankly, on the economic scale of society are represented, from those who live in dire poverty, from a place you call in the book the settlement, to factory workers, to maids, to cooks, to prostitutes, to owners. And the clash and the interrelationship of those sectors. I mean, you show tremendous insight into the point of view of all of these sectors, and you also show some sympathy for them. I wanted to just raise with you to just compare that to what is happening in the Black world today, in the Black community today. Do you see a change? Do you see, I think from your previous answer, you're saying the sectors in some cases are further apart than they had been, and that this has been part of the impact of what is now a greatly expanded Black middle class.
Yeah, which moved out.
Yeah.
Moved someplace else. And left those neighborhoods for the people, you know, who had the fewest and the least resources. The lawyers may still practice in those communities. They don't live there. But the problem for me was either or. If you chose integration and assimilation, why did that necessarily mean that you couldn't have the resources in Black communities at the same time?
That yes.
Is, did you have to integrate, or could you just bring the money into the schools where they were? Did you have to, you know, it was never an either or situation. For me, it looked like there was one road only, and which we took, which was taken, and that had some, you know, peril involved in it. And we can still see you can still see it, you know, in neighborhoods. The authenticity of the race culturally comes from the street, but the execution of the cultural forces in the academy, et cetera, is assimilated. You have to transfer those cultural icons and mores and folklore into something else so that you have people who study Black people, I mean Blacks who study other Blacks.
Yes.
In order to say this is what it is, which is, I'm not denigrating any of this, I'm just talking about the shift. But I think now there's also a call or an awareness of that part of the cultural life of the Black community that we lost. Even in the more radical days of the civil rights movement, there were people who were Black nationalists who were screaming for exactly what Bill Cozy had: Black businesses, Black patronizing each other, living separately from white people, I mean choosing to live separately from white people, having your own stuff. But during the height of the movement, there was the other side of it, which was also, you know, assimilation of the acquisition of full democratic rights in this country. Can always be viewed through the glass, the magnifying glass, when you look at what happens to Black people.
Good evening, Portland. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. We are having our holiday fun drive happening right now, so call on in 1-877-500-5266. You know, this is the station where you're going to hear programming like this interview right now with Toni Morrison. She was a Nobel Literature Prize winner and also a Black woman from America. And you know what's happening right now in our country. You know, this is the station that's going to bring you this type of cross-pollination between culture, news, media, community. And this is why we need to all band together and show how much you care about your community, show how much you care about yourself and our future. Call in right now, 1-877-500-5266, or go online, kbu.fm/give. What's happening there at the Volunteer Center?
Well, good evening, everyone. This is your Volunteer Center, and you're listening to KBOO, and it's our holiday membership drive. My name's S.J. Oxendine, and I'm trying to encourage you to dial 877-500-5266 and become a member. The reason for all of this, why we're doing all of this, is pretty plain and simple. You know that there's over 64,000 people that listen to us in the Portland metro area online each week, and about only 5,000 of the listeners are members. Roughly 7,500 total hours of programming every year is made locally at KBOO. Nearly 500 hours of local focus arts and cultural programming airs on KBOO every year. We estimate that 650 hours of news and public affairs programs are produced at KBOO. Long-form documentary adds another 250 hours a year, all produced here by incredible volunteers. Compare that to other Portland Metro radio stations, and hardly anyone comes close. And that's why we're trying to get you to call 877-500-5266 and become a supporting member. It'll make you feel real good if you do. The cost of the transmitter and the translator, tower rental, is $64,000. Phones and internet is $21,000. Equipment and repair replacement is $10,000. And the website itself is $54,000. So as you can see, we need the support that only you can give us. Show us that you value this community resource by calling 877-500-5266 and be a member. Imagine this scenario. You heard a little snatch of a song at a club or a party or on some passing car stereo, and you loved it, but you couldn't get it, you couldn't find it, but you turned into KBOO, and inevitably, serendipitously, you heard the song you loved. The DJ gave you the name, a cool story about the band.
Yes, it's...
And a playlist posted online with the audio able to listen. So where else are you going to get that? Please call 877-500-5266.
Interesting that you have said that. A few weeks ago, I spoke with the Caribbean author George Lamming, who wrote that wonderful book, In the Castle of My Skin.
Right.
Yes, and one of the things he talked about in referring to the growing middle class in the Caribbean region, he was frankly a bit critical, and he said, listen, there's a kind of a moral bankruptcy going on, and that this is contributing to some of the problems that we're having with our youth now. And we know that there is a tension between and within the Black community. I know we don't like to talk about it that much, but it does exist between that middle class and between those with the least, with the grassroots. And you actually addressed this tension and love in the wonderful storytelling way that you have. So from what you're saying, you do think that it is a significant thing to address in the Black community. And I wondered if you observed this kind of shift going on as you were growing up and developing in Lorain, Ohio, or something that...
so many thousands of years ago. It hadn't happened then.
Right.
Until, of course, everybody that I knew in Lorain was dirt poor, but I think it was one doctor, and he lived sort of around the corner. We didn't socialize with them, but I think there were other reasons for that. But I do remember it being very distinctive in when I was in college. You know, when I went away to school, which was, you know, in the 50s, and then began to see it rapidly in the late 50s, or at least the situation in which you could talk about people who were in my socioeconomic class as a kid as them. I mean, I was a them.
Right.
But, you know, money does that. And this country is, you know, class ridden. It doesn't like to talk about it because they've always been able to say black people. show that you are, you have arrived, is not necessarily by education, but for other people, it's just the acquisition of things. You know, you just buy stuff. And that gives you, you know, sort of feeling that, you know, you crossed the line somewhere.
Yeah, so that brings us, that buying stuff brings us to, there's a character in Love named Dark Cosey, who in fact was the father, I think, of Bill Cosey, who was the main character. And this Dark Cosey, and interesting that you chose that name, he was adept at accumulating wealth. In fact, he made money during the Great Depression, and it was actually described as part of a long line of black folks going back to slavery that was into that kind of accumulation. And Dark is not a sympathetic character.
No, he's a traitor. He's a stooge.
Yeah.
Stooge. He, that story they told about how wonderful they were was all fantasy with Bill Cosey's family. The truth was that he did, his father did have a lot of money, earned it, but he earned it in, you know, a nefarious way. There used to be, and they probably are now, not quite informants, but people who white establishment figures can count on to tell them what's going on, who was hiding in the neighborhood,
right,
who had done, you know, and he was paid for that service. And that's a real, that's informing, not because you have to or somebody's threatening you or because, you know, there's something in exchange, but that's money. And that money was so bloody and so soiled. So his son, who inherits it, decides to do just the opposite and have this fabulous resort and classy entertainers and women and men who came were, you know, the creme de la creme, and have, let everybody have fun. That was his plan. Well, of course, you know, things do go awry.
Things do go awry. And you also, though, even with Bill Cosey, in the book, you do show that there was a time that he actually refused a request on the part of some members of the black community to, I think, sell some land or something and made another kind of deal. So even though he tried to do the opposite of his father, it seemed as though there was still a little of the chip off the old block left.
Yeah, he didn't jump on that right away, although I think his wife, by the time he was old then and probably didn't care, I think he'd had a lot to do with that. But there is a character in the book which whom I liked. Her name is Vida, married to Sandler.
Yes.
And they represented for me a kind of norm, a nice couple, warm but stern and very much aware of their grandson. And she says at one point something that was sort of interesting, which is, she disagrees with her husband about this. She says if he had given that land, they would have had some karate places and some art places and some, you know, health food store.
Right.
But they wouldn't have had any houses, which is what happened to that property. It was developed by somebody, put money into living quarters and took them out of the swamps. So there were even two sides to that. You know, the money they wanted an African-American center, they wanted Head Start, all those good things.
Yeah.
And she's not so sure that if you have to choose which one. And when they approach him and call him an Uncle Tom or whatever, he knows all those people. And he asks about them, because he's the one who paid for the truck. He's the one who did that. Now, that's the consequences of having money. But also, for himself, you know, it's a kind of, you know, when you get money, what do you do with it? You know, he wanted a good time. And he wanted everybody to like him.
Yeah.
You know, which is what you feel when you're 6 years old.
That's what you do when you have money. You have a good time and you share it. So share it with us. This is KVU. It's our holiday drive. Call in right now, 1-877-500-5266. And how's it going there in the Volunteer Center? I think we got a...
Yes, it's really, really great. We've got a big thank you going out to Colleen, who listened to us and found it within her heart to increase her monthly donation. That's a big thank you.
Thank you, Colleen.
You know what? You get this. You get that. That's for doing that.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a party.
If you are listening to KBOO right now, what you are hearing is our holiday membership drive. And we are trying to get people to support us. And if you're wondering where that money might go, I'm going to give you a little information on that. Your membership allows us to make space for community leaders to talk about their work on air and during the KBOO news. We train volunteers in how to engineer a broadcast journalism program, and we do that completely free. All you have to do is show up and be interested. We mentor youth collective members, connect people to KBOO through free mobile apps, empower people to learn how to lift barriers to access, address root causes, and support individual and collective agencies through beloved community trainings. And even more than that, produce KBOO News in Depth, a deep investigative segment that airs 5 times a week. All of that is what your money supports. So please call 877-500-5266 and become a member. You know, it doesn't have to be any specific amount. Whatever you can afford. You know, if a quarter is all that you can do, spend a quarter. If you've got $20, spend $20. It's sort of like the movie fundraiser that we do every month. People come in and they go to the Clinton Street Theater, and there's no price. They come into the movie, and if they got $2, that's their contribution, and they buy a ticket. Some people come in and they do $20, and they come. We even have a homeless guy who gives us a quarter, and he goes in for someplace warm to sleep for a couple of hours. So it's a really neat thing, and this is all part of what KBOO does. So call 877-500-5266 and be a part of your community resource.
That's what's so fantastic about community, you know, just the getting together, the exploring, hearing different points of views. And that's what, the type of programming here, you get all sorts of different perspectives, different voices, just all sorts of different arrays. So, and all the music, all the eclectic music. And then you have these type of programmings that that are shared with us, and we share it with you. And like you said before, you know, you're reading the stats. It's not cheap. So you can call 1-877-500-5266 and really give a voice for your democracy, for our democracy. Or we were saying earlier, you can do the Trump bump, where you just add another $2 to your existing donation. And that, if everyone does that, boy.
You can, if everybody, according to our figures, if everybody who's a monthly sustaining member gave one extra dollar, that would bring us to $27,000 a year. And if you gave $2, that's $54,000 a year. That is very much needed for a very unique community resource.
It's a lot of internet.
You're listening to the Sojourner Truth edition of Morning Review, and we're having a discussion with Toni Morrison about her new book, Love. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Yes, well, I you gave that character, I mean, you made him real and gave him, you know, the kind of depth that one can really take hold of. But then they are, speaking of his wife, they are the Johnsons from Up Beach. And the description of the inhabitants of this community reminds me so much, actually, of how those who are frequently spoken of, even by some, unfortunately, in the Black leadership or in the middle class, and also grassroots people who are determined to make it out in such exasperated tones of people who destroy their community, like here in the LA Rebellion, or people who don't like to work, you know, or those children who are incorrigible and will end up in jail. So tell us about that clash, because he the knight, and you got to say something about that name, one of the lead female characters and the wife of this Bill Cosey, is from Up Beach.
Oh, yeah.
So here you have this, the wealthiest man in town, marrying a girl, really, from Up Beach.
He didn't even have a dress. He wore a man's t-shirt.
Right.
But I wanted that, you know, because his granddaughter is her friend, and she is hers. Those little girls, they didn't know who was rich, who was not. They just liked one another.
Yeah.
And when he marries her, it's just shocking, of course, because of her age. But I always felt that one of the biggest shocks, for at least for the town and for the people in the hotel, was partly her age, which was exceptionally young, but also she was one of those, she came from that kind of family, that really trifling, totally lazy kind, just totally dysfunctional. They were not just poor, a lot of people were that, but they were just, you know, they're not doing anything. What they did was give all their children these grandiose names.
Yes, and tell us about that. I mean, that is something in and of itself. Where did that come from, Heed the Knight?
Well, her name came to me with the character, and I didn't know what that was, but I tend to listen to them if that's what I hear. And the phrase came after I realized that those children were called things like Righteous Mourning, Solitude, whatever else was going on.
Right.
And then he, when she finally sees him as a little girl and he asks her her name, she says it, and it was that phrase, Heed the Knight. But who knows where those people got those names from? They were like naming boats or something.
Right.
But I wanted to go as far down the social ladder as I could.
Yeah.
And as far up.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's in... You know, no, I think they're familiar.
Very familiar.
And among us, you know, there were people, families or fathers who ran families in that way, which is not running them at all. And people who had the same paucity of resources would shake their heads, because this was a person with not just without ambition, but was living off of, you know, this little section in there where she tries to go back and see her family, and all they do is say, can I have some? Do you need that? Can you lend me a little of this?
Yeah, they're gonna get access to that to that wealth that they've been, and it's interesting because now on the name thing, I mean, nowadays you have, you know, people naming their kids things like Lexus and mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing, which is a, you know, a whole other story. But interestingly, because the people from Up Beach in a way are reflective of the people who in fact were the ones left behind in that flight, you know, of the middle class in the inner cities and representing that growing gap. But I wanted to ask you about the male youth. You've got a young black man in the story, the character Roman, who had quite a time being, you know, being decent. You know, he had to pay a price for that. Why do you think this character is important? And I also know you have a couple of sons, don't you? Yeah, and I wondered if that experience really helped in your understanding of a young man kind of growing up and grappling with stuff and, you know, what it means to be a black man in America.
Yeah, partly so, particularly somebody who's 14.
Yeah.
That very vulnerable age when, you know, what you're going to do is be a man, right? That's the whole point. But this kid, whom I really, really liked his company, he had a natural instinct to care for somebody, to
yes.
care for something that was wounded. He didn't even know he had it. And in that scene where he's supposed to join in with the assault, and he rescues that girl, and he is ashamed of himself, because that kind of instinct is understood to be weakness. And his fellow 14-year-olds call him names, he has embarrassed them by this, you know, it's a girlish thing to do, they say. And he, of course, is, I suppose, redeemed by this other young girl who comes to town.
Yeah.
And he can, you know, fulfill his appetites.
Right.
But I always knew he was going to be the one who would rescue those women for almost the same reason. Because that kind of love, which is what humans do when they're untampered with, is so natural. It's not natural or inevitable that we just come out of the cradle and just start hating one another. There is this other thing, and only human beings feel that. Only human beings have language that complicated enough to reconcile. And it's not just a question of the preservation of the species. It's a much more complicated thing. So I was showing that kind of love, which is just one human being looking at another and seeing you in trouble and not pushing on and helping you in your, you know, have more trouble. And also those young girls, and also romantic love, also the love between Roman's grandparents, which is the kind of an old-timey companionship where you see couples who don't even have to talk anymore because they know what each one is going to say, plus the speaker, the L character, who has a different kind of, I don't know, it's not quite maternal, but it's wide-spirited. You know, she's very judgmental. But, you know, she's not going to call the cops.
One of the main characters in the book is someone who hardly appears at all. I mean, she's always there.
Yes.
But, you know, tell us a little about that. I mean, that was something that's at least new to me and quite different and very effective, I might add.
She opens the book and closes it. She also intervenes in it. And I thought she had a wonderful sound in her voice. I mean, her knowledge and her eccentricities and so on were very appealing to me. But she has another role to play. She was very much involved in that family and understood things they didn't understand. It was a figure I could use to expose certain kinds of secrets. And also to comment, you know, generally, like an observer. At some point, she is no longer there, but, I mean, no longer in the real world, but, you know, for her, she's still commenting, meddling in people's lives and having something to say and so on.
Good evening, Portland. You're listening to KBOO. This is our holiday drive. How's it going there at the Volunteer Center?
We're doing quite well, quite well. Good evening, everybody. This is KBOO's holiday membership drive, and we're trying to encourage everyone to call 877-500-5266 and do what you can to support the best community resource in town. You know, every dollar matters. It's why we're challenging our monthly sustaining members to increase their monthly donation, as one of our friends did just on the last break. It kind of breaks down like this. If you give $1 a month more, it's $27,000 a year. $2 is $54,000 a year. Pick up that phone, won't you, and dial 877-500-5266 and show your support for your community station. And to make a little case for that, I'm going to give you a little information. This is a place for you to experience different kinds of music on the radio dial. You're in that space, and it's called KBOO. You support the local music scene with your KBOO membership. You make so much happen, from shows that focus on Portland-based musicians to live remote broadcasts, from local and live music events to in-studio performances. You protect the well-being of local music. This is what your money goes to. Each day, a live and local DJ captivates you with music you won't hear repeated over and over. You help KBOO air music that is inventive, creative, and informed. And with your contribution, you share a city with credible and authentic musical experts, and they're based right here in your neighborhood. So please call 877-500-5266 and show that you care.
That's right. We care for you. So this is why we have our quality programming, non-biased news. We don't give you the type of stuff that the mainstream gives you. And you are our live stream, so donate today. Help us help you maintain this community radio alive. 1-877-500-5266. And back to the interview with Toni Morrison.
The Sojourner Truth edition of Morning Review, and we're having a discussion with Toni Morrison.
But she was technically a solution. And a really interesting one, because she really affects a lot in that household, not just by cooking and watching, but she's the one who steps in and stops things. She's the one who clarifies things. And I liked her because she probably only says four things, or has four, maybe five sentences in the whole book to people in the book. And she identifies herself as quiet, and she doesn't talk, she doesn't do this, she was always that unspeaking person. But she's talking all the time in the book, constantly. You know, talking to the reader.
Yes.
She's not talking to the character.
Right. Well, it was very effective. I know we are running short of time. There's so much we can talk about. There are two things, though, that I really would like to ask you about. One, just getting back to Heed the Night for a moment, that character from Up Beach. And, you know, there is that view of people, you know, there are those people over there who are unproductive or whatever, which many of us know is far from the case. You know, it takes so much to survive on very, very little, which people obviously had to do. But this Heed the Night was also very clever. I mean, here was someone who wasn't really literate, but she is really quite bright. And I think that also says something to people.
They weren't stupid. They were just that family. They could manage to live without doing anything. But he has, you know, when you say somebody's illiterate, generally you think, well, they just, you know, they'll never learn. But if you don't read, you have to use other kinds of sensibilities.
Right.
I mean, you have to be serious. It's like I've had students who had those reading problems. Where they can't put the sentences together and the words go back, they have to do something else. It's like a blind person has to have strong hearing and a deaf person has to see. You know, you overcompensate for certain deficiencies. And she was not only knowledgeable in a number of areas, she was cunning also.
Absolutely. And also that there's a character who lost her mind, one of the women who lost her mind, May. And it was just amazing how you really had an insight into that. It was almost as though her madness, you could actually understand it in a way. I found in reading it, it really showed an insight into that state of mind. I was quite struck by that. But finally, I did want to ask you about film. I was quite struck when a comment that a Black Caribbean-based author said to me, it might have been Lamming actually, that the view that people who live outside of the United States have of Black people living in the United States is what they see on film. And for so many reasons that I can't state right now, there isn't time, that is really a scary thought. But one I'm sure is grounded in some reality, and at least one of your books, Beloved, was made into film. I wondered what do you think of that? I mean, would I broach too much to ask if the thought occurred to you about love perhaps being made into a film?
Oh, I'm scared of the whole I don't know anything about it. I mean, about the filmmaking industry, except the fun stuff, you know. But it's a huge medium. And it seems to me, I think I heard an actor say, it's too big to be merely entertainment. But the fact is that that's what it's about. And it just gets more outrageous and more outrageous and more unproductive than ever. And it's a sorry state, I think, not just of African-American films, I'm just hypersensitive to that.
Yeah.
But almost all of them.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's an almost a kind of perversion, you know, to see all these things that we fought so hard on, and they fought so hard long before I got on this earth in order to correct, being displayed as fun without wit, you know, and without subtlety and without nuance, just blatant and overwhelming and chuckling. Nobody went to see Beloved. I mean, very few people went to see Beloved.
Wow. What a loss.
And it had all these incredible reviews and all this work by the Harpo and all those people who did it. And what everyone thinks about whether one likes the movie or not, the fact is that it was serious.
Yes.
It was a serious film.
Yes, a serious film based on a very, very serious book.
And nobody wanted to, and, you know, nobody wanted to see it. Although I have to say that any film about slavery from the point of view of a slave fails at the box office unless it's Birth of a Nation or Gone with the Wind.
Well, that's quite a comment
because
on...
Because they are not from the point of view of the slave.
That's right. That's quite a comment on where we are right now. Would you care to comment on your next project? I know you always have a next project. Is that right?
I try to always have one. I don't feel good when I don't. but what I have in mind now is just so vague and fragile. I couldn't even begin to explain it because I haven't explained it to myself yet.
I do understand that. Well, I wondered just if before leaving us, if there was anything you wanted to say just about the situation we find ourselves in today, as a community and as a nation. I mean, here we are very much living in a globalized world. The comment on film reflected that, the idea that people in the Caribbean region or that huge population of black people who are in Brazil, that their view of those of us living in the United States is, I mean, it's heartbreaking, really. And I wondered, given the wars that are happening, the situation in Iraq, I mean, it just anything now that you would wish you had the time to say and didn't have to say, and you had to 2 minutes to say it,
okay.
What would you
I
share with us?
I have to say, one, the world is vile. Two, it's going to be all right.
Well, Toni Morrison, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was really a pleasure.
Yeah, many in our audience are huge fans of yours, and there's so much more we would like to hear from you, and we certainly
I'm going to come out there.
Oh, wonderful. That's very good news. Well, thank you again for being gracious enough to speak with us.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's right, Portland. You are listening to KBOO, and this is our membership holiday membership drive. Call in now, 1-877-500-5266 to support us, continue supporting us, and whatever else have you. How's it going there at the Volunteer Center?
All right. It's going quite well. And this is almost 8 o'clock. It's December 5th, 2019, and we're going to let you in on a little of our premiums that we have to give you this month. If you pledge $75, you get a KBOO logo t-shirt. This t-shirt is black. It's got really cool colors that say KBOO on it. And there's also a Music Makes the Movement tote bag. It's really heavy duty. It's got a great emblem out on front of it, and you'll be the envy of everybody in the Safeway store if you take that with you. And we've got two-sided hoodies, and that's going to go for $300 or just $25 a month. And all of these clothing articles come in a variety of sizes. So please call 877-500-5266 and show your support for your community resource. My name is S.J. Oxendine. I'm about to go away for the evening, but I'll be here tomorrow to do a little bit more pitching. So don't forget about us. You know, we need everything that you can possibly do. And if you can't support us, come and be a part of us. KBOO brings in all kinds of people, mentors them into the radio business, and you can do what we're doing right now. And you can be a part of the summer festivals, and you can go to news happenings, and you get the best news all the time. So call 877-500-5266 and support KBOO 90.7.
Thank you for that. And yes, we are in our KBOO membership winter pledge drive. Please call 1-877-500-5266 and make your pledge this evening. We are trying to make a match with our Tuesday give drive, and we can make that happen by you, dear listeners, giving your support to